to overcome fear. Okay? Stand with your feet shoulder width apart. Breathe in through the nose for a 5 count. Hold the breath for a 5 count. Then push down on your diaphragm for a 5 count. So in through the nose, 5. Hold for 5. Out for 5. And what you're doing is giving you time to think. And this is how you can overcome fear. You see something, someone's on the floor, leg missing or whatever. Okay, think about it, breathe, and you'll be able to deal with that situation. You can always tell people who attended my seminars, they're at the bus stop, breathing like this, skinning a cat, lighting a fire, whatever, okay. But practice it. It's a good way. You know, it's cool. It's slowing everything down. I guess a lot of you have been in incidents where it seems like slow motion. This is the power of adrenaline. When you take a film slow motion, the camera turns over 10 times normal speed. So that's why it slows everything down. And this is the power of adrenaline, okay, as long as you retain focus. You see kids in the park running, and another child is running after them. And as they get closer, the one in front goes to pieces. Okay, they lost coordination. I just go back to my father again, why I come in the army. He worked in the docks all his life, and he liked to drink. And so the pubs were opening in Dockland all the time. He was in a port wine dock, and there's duty-free on ships. So he had his fair share. And he'd come home any time, and it was like a ritual. He'd come home with his bike, and I had to take the bike clips off him, put them on the handlebars, make sure the lights are turned out, put the newspaper from his saddlebag on the table. The table was laid out, my mother, with military precision. Dinner, which was heated between two plates. You could turn it over, nothing would fall off, because it was all congealed gravy, which you had to check, because you never knew what time it come. And then 12 o'clock, cup of tea, 2 inches this way, milk, 2 inches this way, sugar. Here was salt and pepper, bread and butter, paper, and 4 inches from the sugar up here, halibut oil capsules. Now, I never knew how this happened, and I swear my innocence. I've been working on a bike, and I stripped down the gears, and I put all the ball bearings in a halibut oil capsule bottle. And somehow this finished up 6 inches from the salt, just above the paper. And he came in worse for wear, sat at his table, automatically drinking, eating. He picked up his halibut oil capsules, failed to notice he had 2-3-inch spherical ball bearings that went in his mouth instead of his capsules, went round his teeth like a Bagatelle machine, and he swallowed them. I was at the door, couldn't tell what happened next, because he went ballistic. I mean, father had a temper, you know. Normally he chased me to the gate, so I made it to the gate. I told you I was fit when I come in the army. So I got to the gate, he kept on coming. So I ran to the corner, he's still after me. Run best part of the way around the block. And at one time he's gaining on me. So I think, breathing, coordination, you know. Fortunately, his bearing seized up, but I kept on running into the recruiting office. That's gospel. Okay, so fear and pain, very, very positive. And now, to put it all in perspective, food, fire, shelter, water, navigation, and medical. Most people said water, which is most precious commodity on earth, but we need shelter. Does that make sense to you? Okay, so we use the acronym PLAN. P for protection, L for location, A for acquisition, water and food, and N for navigation. Okay, so protection. Initially, protection from further danger. It's no good staying here if there's a forest fire, avalanche, elephants come in, I'm going to hide into nothing. So we always stay as close to the incident as possible, and for several reasons. One, I've booked in and booked out. Probably got injured people that can't move anyway, and I can utilize all the wreckage, and it's easier to see. We always find a vehicle. In Oman, a few years ago, a vehicle broke down 30 miles from the road. It was running parallel with it. The two guys got out, thought we'd make the road. It's only 30 miles away. They underestimated the effect of the sun and the heat, and we found the vehicle the next day. We found them 5 days later. And the thing to bear in mind, I see a lot of people around here all in camouflage, which is great. But if you fall on the floor or you're trying to be looked for, you're handicapping yourself. Wear something bright. Yeah, you know, oranges, blues, a contrast to the surroundings, because it's very hard to find someone if they're on the ground. Okay, so protection from further danger, and then protection from the elements. The rain, the wind in this country, the cold in the extremes, and the disease in the jungle, okay? So we build a shelter, and there's always something we can build a shelter from. Either by digging down in the earth, you've seen lots around here, taking a poncho with us, and always make a shelter. Part of this is fire. I've seen some excellent fire lighting demos today, and you must be able to light a fire under any conditions anywhere in the world, okay? So have you all practiced your fire lighting? Yeah, get the fire going. Okay, now, the most important, or one of them, for fire is boiling water. 90% of all ailments caused initially in a survival situation is by drinking bad water. So we must have the ability to boil it. There are other ways which I'll mention, but boiling is probably the safest. The only water we don't treat when we're out is water catchment. Rain that we catch either directly off the trees or off our shelter. Okay, everything else we always boil or sterilize by chemicals. So, fire. Why else do we need fire? Anyone? Keep it warm. Yeah. It supplements calories. Yeah. Signaling. Yeah.
Scare off wild animals.
Cooking. Psychological. Morale. Yeah.
Keep the beasts away.
Protection. Great. Yeah. Now, I guess you're all frightened about animals. They are a risk, but a very small one. In Kenya, we had a fire going, and a rhinoceros come in, and it danced on that fire. We don't know anything about it. We took to the trees, but there's always a contradiction. But basically, animals are frightened with fire. Now, it's not the large animals you want to be worried about. It's the flying insects. Mosquito, it kills millions of people every year. The sand fly, dengue fever, and just a common fly that you get around here. What a fly does, it lands on a big pile of, it lands on a turd, okay? It's got hairy legs, it regurgitates 4 times every minute. So it's gobbling up, crap all over it, flies into camp, lands on your sausage, does a little dance, regurgitates. You might as well dip your sausage in that turd and save the fly on the problem, okay? So it's the flying insects you want to be careful of. We're all fine about lions and tigers, but quite honestly, it's the flying insects that are going to cause you more grief. So a good hot smoky fire will keep them away, hopefully. Okay. Yeah, we mentioned the other signaling. We make smoke by day, flame at night, and 3 fires in a triangle, and we construct, you're familiar with the tripod and the fire halfway up it? Good kindling, all covered in green stuff, you know, green leaves, branches, ferns. And space them out about 50 metres apart if you can. And any aircraft on a prescribed flight, you know, thousands of feet, see 3 fires burning, they will come and effect a rescue or dial it up to get a rescue going. And by day, you take all the green stuff off it, light the fire so it's blazing away. Sorry, you leave the green stuff on so it's a smoke generator. Overnight, you take all the green stuff off, which keeps that fire dry, regardless of the weather. And this way, the 3 fires is a signal. Okay? Now, if you are lost and people are looking for you, obviously 1 fire they come to. But you must have the ability to light or make fire. Okay? We got our shelter, we got our water. Now, location. We want to be found. And I tell people, you want to stand out like a turd on a snooker table, okay? You want to be found. So just carrying a whistle, making noise. You're all familiar with the emergency signal, a whistle, which is 5 seconds, yeah. But not like a demented football referee. And likewise, if you've got a torch, how would you signal with a torch? SOS. 3 dits, 3 dots, 3 dots. Okay, imagine you're cold. And you're there like this, it's not a really recognised signal. Use the 6 spaced flashes. Get me? Off for 5, off for 5, 6 times. Now, you got a vehicle, use the horn. 5, wait. Okay, 6 times, same with the lights. And this way, anyone switched on will come and effect a rescue. Okay? So, it's important. A whistle is an excellent way of retaining location. In the jungle, you've got bamboo, hollow trees, you'll make a lot of noise, you've got your mess tins. There's always something you can do. Especially around this area, we find climbers all huddled together, set up miles of rope. Get the rope out as high as you can off the ground using rocks. Rip up the old fall blanket or any bright material, tie it to it, and it becomes more obvious. Instead of just trying to find a dot on the ground, now we've got hundreds of yards of rope. Makes sense? So always give yourself a chance. Okay, heliograph has affected more rescues than anything else. You know the shiny mirror? It's, on a day like today, fantastic. Under ideal conditions, it can be seen 20 miles away. Aircraft just over the curvature of the Earth have seen flashes, investigated, and they've been rescued. So if you carry a survival tin, polish the lid up so it acts as your heliograph. Plus any wreckage, like you've got mirrors, hubcaps, use them. Make it, you know, make yourself as obvious as you can. So remember, always book in, book out, stay to the route. If you've got to change it for some reason, you know, tell someone. Now, mobile phones, I hate them, but it's the best thing in the world in an emergency. People, they summited Everest, they couldn't get back to their lower camp, and a guy from the top of Everest, he phoned his wife in Hong Kong, who phoned Kathmandu, who phoned base camp, who phoned the high camp, and they effected a rescue. So it's a wonderful thing, and I think they should only be used in emergencies. I see kids come out of school and they're phoning each other, and they're just close apart, don't they? So I ain't got a phone, that's why I'm a bit jealous, I guess. But they're a great bit of kit, okay? So always book in, book out. Tell the authorities what you're doing. Okay, what route you're going. Give time scales. And it's in your interest that if something happens, and the survival situation is always the event of several situations. You know, the weather's bad, so you get blown off course. You lost an instrument, the compass or the map. Someone's injured, and this is nature. Okay, expect the worst. Okay, A is acquisition, water and food. We say 3 days without water, but 3 weeks without food. Now, there's a guy in the last war called Silito who got split up from his patrol in the Libya desert, and he walked by day. Instead of walking at night, resting by day, he'd done everything wrong, and he tried, you know, walk by day. He got so dehydrated, no water for 8 days, but he's now on supportive medicine. Every bodily function is dependent on body moistures or fluids. You know, my reason, my nervous system, my power of thinking, digesting food, temperature control, getting rid of waste, it's all down to body fluids. And I must keep it topped up. Now, the least amount of water you can survive with in a 24-hour period is half a pint. You might see Jack Hawkins in a film, they're in a lifeboat, and he undoes the water bottle, and he gives everyone a little top, and there's always Richard Attenborough, he's the coward, always crying. They drink it. If you try to drink your water like that, you'll be dead before, this is if you had the willpower, before you finish that bottle. It's like throwing a small amount of water on a piece of tin that's red hot. It just evaporates immediately. Get the idea? And so, half a pint of water. Now, if by carrying a 2-pint water bottle, we say we got 4 days' water in that bottle. And from the last half pint, I can expect 3 days survival time. So in theory, I could go 7 days, as long as I follow the rules, i.e. no exertion, no smoking, eating, you won't feel like eating anyway, keeping cool, don't strip off, don't lay on the hot earth, try and get any advantage, any breeze, any fell water to keep you cool, the breathing, yeah, being strong mentally, you can expect 7 days of survival time. Does that make sense to you? Okay, never drink salt water, never drink urine. Okay, use it to dampen down your clothing. A lot of vehicles now, although they're in the desert and they've got aluminium heads, there's an additive in the water that you don't want to drink. So any water like that, use to keep you cool. Don't drink it. And the only water we don't sterilise is rain catchment. Okay, now when you're out, you sterilise your water with chlorine tablets or iodine. Chlorine. The British Army, this magnificent specimen you see in front of you, is a result of 28 years on chlorine. The Americans use iodine, but the Brits were cheapskates. Chlorine is cheaper. Swimming bath water, that is chlorine. They say one tablet, 1 litre of water, that's magic. But if that water is heavily sedimented, you must filter it first. Because chlorine attacks the major particles in the water and the microscopic bacteria you're trying to kill goes unchecked. And so what we do, we make a filter, take a sock, or better still, take your mate's sock. Okay, moss on the top, charcoal sand, pour the water through. What you collect, it might look clear, but that's got the microscopic bacteria. Then one tablet in that litre, it does exactly what it says on the tin. Okay, so a lot of people are not aware of that, especially in Kathmandu where the water comes off the glacier. It's so heavily got so much crud in it that the chlorine is not effective against the bacteria. Now, iodine, the Americans use it because it's better against giardia, another thing in the water. But pregnant women cannot take it, or anyone with a goiter problem. Are you familiar with goiter? In third world countries, people got neck like this because the glands here, there's a lack of iodine in the diet, so this gland increases. So there is health effects. And like I say, British Army, cheapskates, I can only tell you about chlorine. Okay. Boiling's best, chemicals next. In your survival kits, do you carry potassium permanganate?
Yes.
Purple crystal? Okay, it's a real versatile crystal, and I recommend it to anyone. Basically, if you mix a bit of sugar with it, bit of friction, you get a fire going. If you mix it till it's crimson red, it's excellent as an antiseptic. If you mix it till it's deep purple, this is all done by solution, it's great for antifungicidal. You know, you get athlete's foot, ringworm, tinea, these are all forms of fungi. It's really effective against that. But if you just, in a little water, put the tiniest crystal in that water, let it absorb fully until it's like Matthieu's rose de wine, just pink. It sterilizes the water. On a small tub, no bigger than my thumb, India Survival Kit will sterilize 300 gallons of water. Okay, so it's a real beneficial thing to carry. Plus, in the snow, if you sprinkle it, SOS, to make a signal, you can see it miles away. Okay, so water, very, very important. Okay, food, my favorite subject. What's the longest you've gone without food?
An hour.
Hour. Like I say, if I miss my breakfast now, I'll go giddy. You know. We say 3 weeks without food. Without water, your appetite suffers anyway. And people do this with no ill effects whatsoever. But the record was 56 days. One of our lads got jailed in Leeds jail, and he went on a hunger strike. Now, there's lots of cases where they put drips into that, so I don't think that counts. They can survive indefinitely. But he'd done a straight 60-odd days, I believe, which was a record. But again, I don't say practice this, you know what I mean? Go without if you have to, you know, but always promise yourself you've got enough food on you, you've got enough knowledge to take from nature, never be hungry. Okay, the nutritional chain, what we teach is plants, fungi, insects, fish, and game. So right at the bottom with plants, we don't have to wrestle them, cut them, bleed them, skin them. It's just a matter of identification, gathering them, and then preparing them. Now, fortunately, there is an edibility test, but it's got a downside. Imagine if you're starving hungry, you could go out there and eat 20 pounds of grass, 100 weight of grass if you want. But unfortunately, we cannot break down the cellulose in the grass, which the herbivores do. They've got different digestive system, and they get nourishment from it. Now, we cannot do that. So if I was foolish enough to eat grass, I'd have a dump, and there'd be a big dump here, which would have more nutrients in than my body, because I've wasted vital minerals and vitamins to try and assimilate the grass, and it's passed through my body. So it's counterproductive. So the edibility test is looking at something, hopefully you can recognise it, the shape of it, the colour of it, where it's growing, and then feel it. Is it hairy? Is it prickly? Pick it, crush it, express the juice and sniff it. It might be garlic, ginger, you know, a familiar smell. You say, ah, I recognise it. You're still not sure, rub it on the lower lip. And the lips are very sensitive. and wait 5 minutes. If there's any burning, stinging sensation, discard it. There's no problems. Put it in here. What we got here is an absorption gland. And what happens, just that small piece, no bigger than, say, there. I leave it for 5 minutes again. Any discomfort, stinging, burning, soapy flavours, something not quite right, spit out that specimen and say, right, I'm not touching it. Make sure your specimen is clean in the first place. You don't want to pick something where a cow's been or a human's been. You know what I mean? So a bit of common sense. Okay, if there's no ill effect again, chew up the same specimen, swallow it, wait 5 hours. That seems very long and drawn out, but at least you won't poison yourself. And this is plants only, okay? I've got to stress, plants only. Always get your mate to do it, if possible, okay? So you borrow your mate's sock, get him to do this. In the army, it's dead easy, because the sergeant says to the corporal, eat it. He turns to the lance corporal, eat it. He turns to the private, eat it. So the more rank you've got, it does have its privileges, you know. Talking about mates, if I'm walking down the road and I get attacked by a dog, I tell my mate, run for it, and I stand still. He gets ripped to pieces, yeah? And likewise, if I go down the road, there's a bunch of yobs, I say, stand still, I'll run for it. You get beat up. And this is for the fellas, really. If you ever share a hotel room with a bloke that snores, before you go to sleep, kiss him full on the lips. Tongue is everything. He's not going to sleep a wink, is he? And if he kisses you back, you're not going to sleep a wink, are you? 2 hours ago, won't be checked. Okay, so food, plants. We also use plants for medicine. All your drugs are derived from plants. Some are synthetic, but the majority still come from plants, you know. And so if we know this, you know, the more knowledge we got, obviously the better I can deal with any situation at all. I just got to mention one, it's my favourite. Prisoners, when they was locked up, because of their conditions and their diet, they got worms. Big intestinal worms. So what little nourishment they was eating, the worms would take all the nourishment. And we have a saying, you mustn't keep pets in a survival situation, okay? And what they'd done, they was that desperate, they used to drink petrol. Now imagine that, you got your airway and your stomach, and if you get a gagging, instead of going in your stomach, it goes in your lungs, you've got a serious problem, especially if you're a smoker, okay? And so we don't say that if you're in a tight situation, you've got worms, and you only ever try this once, okay? Are you all familiar with maiden fern? You know common fern?
Yeah.
Okay. Pick a generous handful of that, boil it in water, reduce it till it's a brown, evil-smelling liquid, and that is a violent purgative. And by violent, I mean violent. Don't think you drink it, go out the camp. You won't have time. So what you do, you tell your mate, I'm going over there. Okay, I'll be back in 5, come and find me. Go out and clear a big area all the way around you. Take everything off below the waist and hang it on a tree. Okay, don't demonstrate this. And then take the solution, and it's so potent, it induces vomiting, and also it hits the gut, opens the bowels, and these parasites, the worm, they let go and they're flushed out of the body. Yeah. What I wanted to do was take away all the evil taste and smell and put it in bottles and play tricks on people. It'd be great, you know. But it's a one-off, okay. But plants are very useful with medicine. You're all familiar with willow, contains salicin, you know, so the more knowledge you've got, like I say, you can handle any situation. And it's all out there. You know, you can take from nature and supplement what meagre rations you've got. Okay, above plants then come fungi. Now, with fungi, it's positive recognition. If you're not sure, you leave them. Or slip them to your mother-in-law or your mate, okay? But they're so potent. And Amanitophalloides, are you familiar with it? The death cap?
Yep.
It accounts for 90% of all fatalities. It's a buff colour, the top. It's got traces of white. But it's got the stem with a white ring around it and a vulva, like a bulb at the bottom. And them three things, white gills, vulva, and a ring, be very, very wary. Now, the Phalloid is poison as such, but nothing after ingestion for 18 hours. And it tastes sweet. So especially children, oh, that tastes sweet. Where most plants are bitter and you'll spit them out anyway. But this, it's false. It smells of raw potatoes. So you think, oh, familiar smell. But the potato is a member of the Solanum family, which is deadly nightshade. So you're on a loser there. So 18 hours, you can imagine, violent headaches, vomiting, going to delirium, and 90% of all cases are fatal. And I'm not going to mention that word again, because we're all survivors now, yeah? We've got the will to live. You still got the will? I keep on going for a bit longer then. Okay, so you mustn't underestimate the power of fungi. The last case I read about was a family in Scotland. And he was a real experienced guy for fungi. And he collected what he thought were chanterelles. In fact, it was Cortinarius. Did you read the case at all? And the whole family, four of them. They ate it, it destroys your liver. And although they got expert medical attention, they all died. So, fungi. If you're not sure, leave them. Tree fungi, there's anything grown above your waist. There is no poisonous tree fungi. Some are excessively bitter, full of tannin from the tree. Some are so hard, it's just like eating a tree. But there's some really useful ones. Jew's ear, oyster, all these different ones I'm sure you're familiar with. So look around you, anything on your above your waist, as long as you cook it, you won't poison yourself, okay? But fungi, be very, very careful. Okay, going on to insects. You might say there's not a lot of meat on an ant, but there's millions of them. And in every country, you find termites. They're termites, they build these big nests, which is, they chew up vegetation, secrete it with saliva, and they build that nest. So it's excellent to burn. You put it on the fire and it smoulders and it will burn for hours, giving off a thick black smoke that keeps every fine insect away. If you put it above where you want to fish, as the insects and the eggs drop in the water, you're ground baiting the area, attracting all the fish, then you start hooking them. Okay, so insects play a real important part. If you sink the nest under water, all the eggs and the larvae float to the top, skim them off, and you've got all this protein. Plants, fungi, are just your carbohydrates. For long-term survival, you need protein. And insects are the easiest source of protein. Yeah. The common worm. How many of you have eaten worms?
Yep.
Enjoy them?
No.
Okay. A worm is 75% of the highest protein you can get. Proteins are judged by the amount of amino acids they contain. The body must have 8, and the rest it can make up from food. The worm contains the 8 essential amino acids. Whereas in plant protein, the best, soya, has only got 6. So the worm, don't overlook it. If you're injured, you're on the floor, you can't go running after rabbits, swift again, you can dig down, find worms. If you want to eat them raw, you get maximum nutrition. But what I say is, keep them in a box, purge them for 24 hours, so all the rubbish comes out of them. Then either plunge them in boiling water, put them by the side of the fire to dry, or leave them in the sun. And it's just like, you see on a summer's day after the rain, the worms come out on the garden path, the sun comes out, they look like bacon rind. Yeah, that's the best way of eating them, okay? So you're getting all this protein. I know it doesn't sound palatable, but we run survival courses. We say, yeah, you can do this, do that. On about the third day, people are saying, where's some worms? Where's this? You know, if you're hungry enough, you're going to eat all this. Okay, so insects are very, very important in the nutritional ladder. Above that come fish. We use 3 methods of fishing. And the first one is the night line. You're all familiar with this. We have bootlaces a metre long made of parachute cord. A parachute cord's got a really tough outer skin, but it's made up of lots of strands in the middle. So pulling these out, it's a very strong line. And a night line goes in from the bank into the water with hooks from the survival gym at intervals, about a metre, weighted at the bottom. And any fish coming along, okay, they take the bait and you check it. First light, noon, last light, replace it and get the fish in. So that's a night line. The next one is a gill net. You familiar with a gill net? Again, using the inside of paracord, make a net across the water. Any fish swim into it, get caught by the gills, you've got fish. These are illegal techniques. I never told you this, it's a survival technique, okay? And in the military, we use rapid expanding bait. Are you familiar with this? Familiar with this? It's explosive. It's the best way of fishing. I was telling someone today, a small explosion in the water, it liberates all the oxygen. And the large fish go to the bottom, the small fish come to the top. So it's the only way I like fishing, to tell the truth. Okay.